Welcome to The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building, a podcast by Mythos and Ink Publishing, where we build worlds one story at a time. I'm Kyle.
I'm Emma.
I'm Allison.
Today we are talking about both the new Netflix show and world building we found within it, Shadow and Bone, based on the beloved novels by Leigh Bardugo. Special thanks to our patron TDM for making this episode possible. If you'd like to support the podcast, visit us at patreon.com/mythosandink. For the structure of today's episode, and of course all these episodes, we each have a world building topic that we're bringing to the table to discuss and then share ways to employ those same strategies into our own world building efforts, because that's kind of what we do with The Wayfarer's Guide to World Building. So we wanted to say welcome to all of you that have joined us. For today, I thought we could maybe start with a bit of a lighthearted discussion. I was thinking perhaps we did do favorite scene or favorite moment in the series. What if we were to do favorite character and just defend our favorite
character? Who is yours, Kyle? Kick us off.
Oh, man. Dang it. Because I've got a few.
No, you can only pick one.
It's hard to pick the one.
No, you have to narrow it down.
Pick the one. And I can't pick the conductor. No, I'm just kidding. I don't like him.
I didn't even think of the conductor.
I do like the name of the conductor, but no. It's between the three Six of Crows characters, and I got to pick one of them. I think I'm going to pick Kaz. And I think it's because I know in my topic, I'm going to talk about religion. And I think Kaz's faith is something that I really want to hone in on. But in his character, I saw a lot of myself, of someone who has clearly been burned in the past and has this chip that you carry through in all relationships. It affects everything that you were. I don't know. I just found that to be a very relatable character that spoke to who I was and who I could maybe be. Also, he had a limp, which I could also relate to.
Same. I saw that cane and I was like, I think I need one of those. Like,
I do. I have like my mom's old cane and I've used it and it's like, wow, I feel like such an old man.
You just need a really cool one with like an eagle head or an octopus on the handle or just like
true.
Something.
You know what? If you see one, you let me know and I will clearly purchase
it. Podcast
this.
Listeners, right. If you see a cool cane, email us and let us know because Kyle wants it.
Yeah.
Please. All right. Christiana or Emma, who's your favorite character of Shadow and Bone?
I'm going to jump off yours because it's also one of the three from the Six of Crows. I love Jesper. I love Jesper so much that it makes me want to weep uncontrollably. I think Jesper is witty and hilarious. Specifically, like, I loved him from the get-go, but that scene where he's holding the goat.
Yes.
Oh, and like shooting down all the Volcra. Like, and I was like, that's perfect. That's all I need in life is like a queer character who can hold a goat in one hand and like sharpshoot a bunch of evil monsters with a revolver in the other. Like, that's it. That's all I need.
Yeah.
I love that he just had this emotional attachment to the goat. Yes. The moment that he realized that this goat was meant as bait.
Yeah, I know.
He's like, I am not having it. No.
More emotional support goat.
Yeah. See, that's what I need. Kyle needs the cane. I need the emotional support goat.
Okay. All
this
right.
Has also turned into what item from Shadow and Bone do you want? favorite character. Honestly, the stag and the goat both came to mind, but I don't think either of them really counts as characters. So I think my favorite character is Mal, mostly just because I liked him so much more on the show than I did in the book. So he's kind of like my most improved character. Because in the book, I really didn't like him at all. He was annoying and he was kind of a jerk to Alina, I felt like, a lot of the time. So in the show, I just really appreciated that he seemed to be a much better friend than he was in the book. So
I agree with that, actually. And I remember not being his biggest fan in the books. Like, I didn't have a huge issue with him or anything, but I wasn't like super pumped to see what Mal was going to do next kind of thing. And in the show, I was actually really invested. I was like, well, I want to know what he's up to. I want to know he's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think, it's just the surprise of like, oh, I actually like his character. Okay. We're good. Yeah. Also, honorable mention to the Darkling, just because he's played by Ben Barnes, and I had the biggest crush on Prince Caspian when Voyage of the Dawn Treader came out, so he's fair. Also up there.
I read an article saying that he actually didn't like his performance
really?
In Shadow and Bone because he was such a huge fan of the series, like of the literary series, that he did the best that he could. He would say that, but he just feels like I didn't do it the justice that I really wanted to. And I think that's fair. Like, you know,
you're your own biggest critic.
True professional.
Yeah, exactly. It's never happy. Exactly. The artist who always hates what they've created. That's that seems fair.
To talk about technology in the series, because I think it has a very interesting approach to technology, and I like the way that it blends both modern and fantasy when it comes to technology. So one very notable thing for me was the fact that it includes guns in the universe, and not only guns but machine guns, which is very rare to have. Well, maybe not very rare, but really not that common in a YA fantasy kind of universe. The only other series I can think of offhand that has it is Shadow and Flame. But in that series, the invention of the revolver plays like a very pivotal role, because it's like, this is a game changer kind of thing. And this is one where they're very integrated in the universe, but they're not like this be all end all kind of weapon that they often are when they're introduced in fantasy, outside of, I guess, like steampunk and things like that. There are definitely genres that include it, but in YA fantasy, I feel like there isn't a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it creates a lot of implications, but I kind of like that they don't dwell on them too much. I wouldn't like it as much if it was like, oh, they have machine guns, so they're the best army because they have machine guns, no questions, kind of thing, right? Like they don't.
Well, I liked that there was that. Yeah, there was a little bit of this, like there's the rise of technology in the nations around us, and this holding on of the magic in the old ways in our nation.
Yeah.
And how we have this problem that we kind of created ourselves.
Yeah.
This giant that's holding us back from really evolving. Meanwhile, everybody else doesn't need, they're evolving on their own, and we're being left back. Mm-hmm. Like there's this, that rise of technology around you. I really like the tension that brought.
It's tied into like the trade aspect, right? Because they can't trade with the people around.
So the tech doesn't flow from one place to another as easily as it does, you know, if you're more connected. And it's interesting, I find, like definitely in YA or even in fantasy in general, you don't often see like guns and magic, because I think a lot of authors kind of get stuck on like, oh, well, if you have one, why would you need the other?
Exactly.
And so either guns like don't exist and like tech doesn't exist. Like take like, you know, Hogwarts and Harry Potter, technology doesn't work inside Hogwarts. So that's like just an easy way of, okay, we don't have any tech, don't have to worry about it. Or on the other hand, like guns are so powerful that like you can't do anything against it. And they're like the like ultimate weapon. So it's interesting to see them in this setting where they're kind of on par with magic. Like with magic, you can defeat a gun user, but a gun user can also defeat you. So it's a much more even playing field. Which makes, I think, for a more dynamic story than if one is clearly superior to the other.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I'm still not 100% sure how I feel about the guns in the universe, just because, like I said, I do think they have some implications that aren't explored. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm on the fence as to whether or not I really like that, or if it's a little distracting almost. Mm-hmm. But I think you captured it very well in that usually you want to treat it as it's one or the other. And this one has both and puts them on the same playing field. And that's, I think it's a very interesting approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that I know that Jesper is your favorite character, and he's just that gun is so iconic to him.
I know.
And now you're like, I'm on the fence.
But that's what I mean. Like there are uses for it. I think maybe it's the machine guns that I'm like, I think maybe that's where I'm like a touch, because if you have a revolver, it's a very limited number of shots, like not as high caliber. Like it's like a revolver versus a Grisha feels more level to me than a machine gun versus a Grisha. And though they definitely show machine guns gunning down Grisha's kind of thing, and they have that conversation where they say once they introduced machine guns, it went from like, you know, one Grisha was worth 50 soldiers to, you know, one Grisha is worth 25 soldiers, or it was something along those lines. So they mention it, but I think maybe it's that, like that kind of automated weapon that I wonder a bit more about the implication in the universe.
That's true. And I wonder if we'll see more of that in subsequent seasons. Like if they'll, I feel like it's only going to get more warlike in subsequent seasons. So I wouldn't be surprised if that like becomes more of a thing as we go on even.
Another tech thing, kind of jumping topics. Another tech thing that we have to acknowledge are the sand skiffs.
The boats. Yes.
The boats. But can we call them boats if they're not on
boats
water?
Boats with an asterisk.
Boats.
Boats.
Boats? Question mark, question mark.
Well, I mean, you would still call it like sand surfing.
Maybe
so
we can call them
would,
ships, because you can have spaceships, you can have water ships. They are ships, maybe not necessarily boats.
So like, I think they're officially called skiffs, like sand skiffs.
Yep.
But like in universe. But they're, yeah, they're just tall ships that you can take on the sand. And I think it's really cool and it's really interesting. And what I love about them is that it's another way that it blends technology and magic, because it is this cool technology. The fabricators created ultralight, a material that makes the skiff so much lighter and so much easier to travel and faster and all this stuff. So you have this cool technology created by magic, and it has to be operated by magic because you need a squaller to actually push the air into the sail and get the sand skiff going. And I think that's another really interesting blend between like the magic and the technology of the universe, where they do have tech and they have tall ships and they're awesome and they're super cool. It also very unique. I can't think of another story that has like ships that you travel via sand on kind of thing. And I like that they tied that technology so intricately with the magic, because you need the magic to operate it.
Yeah, it kind of evolves with the environment too, right? Like if, I'm not sure how it was in the books, but when the, I remember in that one scene with the entire rift coming into fruition, like it wasn't a desert that it overtook. It became a desert inside the rift, right? So it was like, we had to adapt, how do we cross this desert that didn't exist before in the dark where there's monsters and all of it. Like this makes most sense. Like in the absence of a plane, what else you got to go across?
You're not going
to
go by foot, because then you're going to like get picked off instantly.
And you can only go 3/4 of the way by train apparently. So
yeah, that also kind of, the train comment kind of ties into the next one, that I think it's interesting that the metal clearly exists in this universe, but they don't use metal for the sand skiffs, which I guess it would be too heavy, but with the fabricators,
you would dig into the sand.
Yeah. But you'd think with the fabricators that like there's an in-universe explanation for very light metal to use on the sand skiff.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. That's a good point.
Yeah. That was something I thought of, where I was like, I'm surprised that wasn't the explanation, that they made ultralight wood, but that they made ultralight metal that you could then use, kind of thing. Because later on, it is shown with Alina, well, to some extent, shown with Alina's gauntlets that they make her, the gloves.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me. We know the fabricators can work with metal, so I'm curious. And I feel like maybe there's an explanation in the book that I'm just not remembering, but
I did like how, like in terms of the technology and how the fabricators played, is that they didn't shun science. Like so many laws of science still existed, but some of those rules were bent, right? So we have this ultralight material, but even when they went back down into the best episode, the heist episode, where they're talking about designing of the lock on the wall.
Yeah.
And how, oh, well, you need somebody who essentially can metal bend this lock to open the door. And he's like, no, we just need a really powerful magnet. because it's still technology.
Yeah.
Like they're still employing, it's just hidden away because they're able to work remotely, essentially. But I love that sort of like, that's where I think the blend was done so well in my mind, is that yes, magic created this and magic can hide it, but there's still technology. And here's my magnet.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I mean,
even call magic. Well, they call, you know, what the Grisha do, small science. Like, it's not even magic. Yeah. It's like, it's all kinds of, even the way magic is even kind of tech, like, which I love. That's my favorite thing about like steampunk. That's my favorite sort of magic systems, is the one where it's sort of just like a different sort of technology that we just don't have in our reality. I love that. So super, super big fan of that in this show.
I mean, I'm obsessed with the fabricators. If I were in that universe, I'd like to think I'd be a fabricator. Maybe bold dreams for myself, but
I see it. I see it.
I'd like fiddling around with things and making stuff. But I like the idea that the small science is the motivator for technological advancement, but also not necessary for technological advancement. Like Kyle mentioned before, like the nations surrounding East Ravka, they're all coming up with technological advancements without the small science, for the most part, at least. Like, they're coming up with these things and they're making it happen. And then at the same time, the small science is making more and different stuff happen, and it's kind of slowly bleeding out to the other areas. And like, it is, I really think, a beautiful blend between magic and technology, where they kind of motivate and feed into each other. And though they can stand independently from one another, they often are kind of intrinsically tied. And I think that's just so interesting that there isn't that really harsh line between the two that is so often drawn in fantasy.
What are some of the things that we need to consider when we are talking about technology and bringing this into the worlds that we built? And maybe some of the things we want to avoid as well. I think for the first one, I would touch on, we kind of hinted at it, is that if you're going to introduce the difference between science and magic, they have to play with one another, but you also can't let guns can just take over the world.
Yeah.
At that point, like, there's you have to understand where your power limits are on each of those, and not just break the rules because it fits your story, but come up with the rules beforehand and play within those rules, because the temptation is to always just one up each other back and forth and back and forth. But I think there's a lot more story dynamic when you find that in the tension.
Part of how they did that is that they gave the technology and the magic the same function to some extent. There's often in magic systems, it's kind of viewed as like a well of power, and that you get like more powerful the more you train with it, so to speak. When in reality, it's because you become more adept at it. You understand it better. You can control it more. And it's very much the same thing with technology, right? The first time you use a computer, the computer won't become more powerful the more you use the computer. But you could be better at using the computer the more you do it, right? And I think that might be one of the things that makes this universe approach that so well, is that, you know, it isn't, neither of them are bottomless pits. They are kind of these defined things that people can own their skills in and get better at, but not necessarily like be the chosen one with it kind of thing.
And I think some of the most beautiful aspects are when they're blended well, right? And Emma, you hinted at that idea of steampunk. And I think steampunk is a genre that does this well with just the majesty of airships, right? This like, it kind of defies science, but there's still a science behind it. And there is some logical rules where there's just a few that are bent that allows these things to happen, but it can really expand your imagination while still feeling rooted in a rule-bound system, in a science-based system, even if some of those rules are a little bent.
Yeah, there's no rule saying that the science in your universe has to be the same as the science in real life, right? I think that's also something to take away from it. Maybe alchemy doesn't work in real life. You can't turn different things into gold on planet Earth, but in whatever story you're writing, maybe it does work. And like, maybe that's the magic, so to speak, or the catalyst.
Yeah, it just needs to be internally consistent. So whenever you're doing tech in your world, just make sure it's internally consistent. I would encourage you all to write steampunk stories, because I want to read more of them. So please write them, send them to me. I will read it.
Steampunk heist.
And
yeah.
Oh, so that would be glory.
Yeah.
Glory incarnate at that point. I think those are all really good tips and tricks for writing technology into your world and to be inspired by the incredible writing of Leigh Bardugo in Shadow and Bone.
If you're looking for a fantasy or sci-fi writing community, we'd be happy to have you join ours on Discord. Head to our website, mythosinc.com, and click on Community under the About section. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to say hi, email us at podcast@mythosinc.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, fellow wayfarers, go build worlds. Bye.
Bye. Bye.